Hi, everyone. I'm grateful to be here, Crystal. Grateful recovering adult child in California. I haven't done this long of a share in a really, really long time. So I'll try to get to 45 minutes and try not to ramble. Where do I begin with my story? I was raised in a Christian home and it was very strict. My father's higher power was one of condemnation and one of just a very judgmental and, a very angry and harsh higher power. And he used religion in my home was not a gift that we were given in order to, build spirituality and, emotional strength. It was used as a weapon to control those in the household. And it was used to really chip away at my worth about of who I truly was. There was a lot of shame in my home. There was a lot of me being blamed for the circumstances in the home, for the dysfunction in the family. I was the scapegoated child. And it was just an absolute nightmare. When I was about 7 years old, both of my parents stopped working. For whatever reasons they stopped working, they did. And neither one of them had they didn't have healthy structure to their days. They didn't have friends. So it was just literally, both of my parents in the house all the time. And the dynamic between them was very, very volatile. My home life was not stable in any way. I had two emotionally unstable parents. I had a father who was very, very rageful. My mother just allowed these things to happen. She allowed a lot of emotional abuse on her children. And I think in a lot of ways, she was afraid of my father. And he ruled the household. He was the head of the household, and what he said went. And like I said, I, from a very young age, was blamed for the dysfunctional dynamic in my home. And as I grew older, they would bring me to doctors and psychiatrists and therapists and, kind of like a, what's wrong with her, fix her type of a thing. And at that time I lost a lot of, and gosh, I had to have been about, say about 15 at this point, about 15, 14, 15. I lost a lot of I lost a lot of trust with doctors because what I knew, what I felt was going on is that I was in a really hairy home environment. I was in a very, very sick environment with very sick adults. I didn't have any adults who were safe, who were emotionally stable, who could help me navigate the challenges of my family life. I didn't have that at all. And so from a very early age, it was going to therapists and, fix her type of a thing. And I was like, the gig was up when they weren't, I lost a lot of trust when they couldn't just tell me, the issue isn't you so much as it is the environment that you're being raised in. And I was like, see you later, I have nothing to listen to from you. So I learned a lot of mistrust with doctors, and I also began a history of trying to use medications to fix what people were telling me was broken, which was myself, my thought processes and how I behaved and my what how do I want to say? I was very rebellious, And so, my parents had me on, a couple different medications and, it just didn't really work well for me. And it was a very slippery slope. And around that time, I met someone who would become basically like my first boyfriend. And he was wrong for all of the wrong reasons. On paper, he was just a terrible fit for me. You know, he was an adult child. He had substance abuse issues. He was homeless. I mean, just all of the things that you wouldn't want for your teenage daughter, he was. And I, you know, used him as a way to escape the home life that I grew up in. So it was a lot of running away with him and, you know, staying out for days at a time, you know, just in these hairy, hairy situations in the streets that I look back and it's a miracle, really, truly, that I'm able to sit here and speak with you today. So yeah, he was not a very good fit for me. You know, he brought me into an environment that showed me, you know, hey, you're not feeling too great. This is how you can feel better. And it became a problem. At that point, I learned how to self-medicate to feel better. Or at least I thought I was feeling better. So that began a whirlwind of self-medicating to get through life, to cope with the circumstances of my life. And I was only 16, 17 at this point. You know, I did not have a value on my life. I did not believe I was precious. I didn't believe my body was precious. I did not believe that I, you know, was smart enough to get into college. You know, my grades were extremely poor. I grew up with a father who very often told me that I was stupid, that I was dumb, that I was ugly, that I wasn't going to amount to anything. My friends were losers, you know, and my friends weren't the best. However, you know, in all of his condemnation, he failed to really put the mirror up to himself to see how he had a role in that. So, yeah, like I said, boyfriend, you know, not a good fit, but I loved him like crazy. And he actually saved my life in some ways. It's really ironic because he was, you know, the first time I realized that life could also be good. You know, my life was just so incredibly depressing. I was so depressed. You know, I'd started having eating issues and self-medicating and, you know, here comes this person. I assigned all of these magical qualities to him. You know, he was my savior and he was my higher power. He was my escape from hell. And that's, you know, a lot to put on someone who already has a lot going on himself. You know, he was 3 years older than me and he had nothing together whatsoever, but we did love each other. And so, you know, ever the great girlfriend I was, you know, sleeping in cars with him and in the hairiest of places. I mean, it was madness. And around when he was about, after we'd been together about 3 years, he passed away, he died. And I'm still not even sure about the circumstances about around his death. I think that it was substance abuse related. You know, he was living in Arkansas and I was in California. We were going to get back together. He was going to move to California and we were going to get married and skip off into the sunset and everything was going to be fantastic. And he was still a wreck. You know, he hadn't figured out very much. You know, my life had actually started to have some forward progress. You know, I had a job working in a law office in Oakland and things were good on paper, on the outside. You know, the exterior was okay. I was living with my parents. You know, I was able to pay the couple bills I had. And when Daniel died, that threw me into, it threw me into hell. I don't know how else to describe that. I mean, I had never lost anyone so close to me ever before. And I was so devastated. I thought that the world was literally going to stop turning. And I just thought I was going to die of a broken heart. And so when he passed away, man, was that hard. And I really picked up a lot of my unhealthy coping mechanisms, one of which was self-medicating. And also one of those coping mechanisms was, you know, running to get into a romantic relationship with a man, because that was my way. That used to be my pattern of escape from unpleasant circumstances in my life. And I, again, like I said, I had no value of myself, of my body, of my person, nothing. And I met a guy online. I think it was a chat room. You guys remember those? I think it was a chat room in the early 2000s. And I didn't know him from, you know, from Adam. And I went to a party on a military base and ended up flirting with another guy there who was dressed as the Incredible Hulk. He was spray painted green from head to toe, and ended up basically, you know, in his truck singing country music. And just, I mean, guy, I don't even know what became of the guy I went with. Well, anyway, I ended up exchanging numbers with the Incredible Hulk, and he ended up being husband number one. And I mean, it went from 0 to 100 very quickly. So didn't bother getting to know this person. I didn't bother understanding who he was as a person, and understanding if he was a whole person coming to this relationship. And really, never mind him, I was a stage five, you know, shit show. I didn't have a thing together. I was in a tremendous amount of grief that I had not processed from the death of Daniel. And I was motivated to get into this relationship with him because I needed him and wanted him to fill the hole in my spirit. And I realize now that I understand now how to look at my motivation behind why I'm doing something. And it's never, I feel that it's not okay for me to get in a relationship romantically for something that I'm needing that I can't do for myself. So I got into this relationship, and 6 months later, we're married. And I'm drunk because I know, you know, somewhere deep inside, I knew that I was making a mistake, that I didn't know this person and that I didn't know myself. You know, the hell with knowing him, I didn't know myself. And that was the biggest red flag, is the fact that I didn't know myself. I didn't know what I need in a relationship, et cetera. So we got married. You know, he went off doing lots of, you know, when they go off, I forget, deploy. He was deployed a bunch. So I was, you know, the stay-at-home wife. I got pregnant with my first child. And by the time I got pregnant, I knew that this relationship wasn't the best one for me. But again, I didn't know any other way to deal with my problems and with the hole in my heart, you know, the hole that was left by having, you know, an unhealthy upbringing, a dysfunctional upbringing. And I had my first son. And shortly after I had my first son, you know, he wanted to move back to Colorado, where he's from. And, you know, again, I knew somewhere inside that was going to be a nightmare. I had no family there. He had all the family there. And he was, you know, it's in his nature to be a controlling person. It's in his nature to dominate. It's in his nature to take advantage. And he certainly did. So he, and not that this relationship was his fault, because it was of my design. I allowed myself to get into that relationship and I stayed. And furthermore, I left to Colorado when I knew it was not the best fit for me. So I went to Colorado and just fell to pieces. I mean, I had a nervous breakdown on the way. Before I'll jump back a bit. So before I had the nervous breakdown, I had got pregnant a second time. And by the time I got pregnant the second time, I knew that it was a wreck. And so we had, during this span, we had actually broken up for about a year and then got back together, and I got pregnant. And again, I got back with him because I was afraid of him. I thought he was going to take my children from me. You know, his family had more assets than I did. They were, you know, they were the better quote unquote team. And got pregnant, had my second precious angel, and I had a nervous breakdown about, when was that? Maybe about when he was about a year and a half. So around 2013, I literally had a nervous breakdown. And it was just the realization that I was in a situation that I could not fix. I was in a situation with a man who was controlling, domineering, and all of these things. I had a lot of stuff from my childhood, you know, packed in the basement that I had not, that was spilling out. Self-medicating was not working anymore. And I was in a place, you know, I had no family to go back to. You know, my parents were still incredibly unhealthy. That dysfunctional home was still full of rage and dysfunction. So I couldn't go back to my parents. You know, I have seven siblings and, you know, they're all little islands. So I couldn't go to them for help and support. So I had a nervous breakdown. After that nervous breakdown, I ended up coming back to California with my two kids and still just, you know, that period of time, is a blur, quite honestly. It is a blur, because I was so disassociated. I sent my kids back with him. They wanted to see their dad. I sent them back with their dad for a visit. And he kept them. And I didn't see them for a year and a half. And it was a terrible, nasty, custody battle. And again, it's a blur. That whole, you know, year and a half fighting with him in court is a blur. And I'm not even sure how I made it through that, but, I made it through relatively sober. I knew enough to get to AA, I knew enough to know that, you know, drinking was an issue. But man, was that rough. And, you know, once the divorce ink was dry, that's when the real fun started. So it began, you know, a 10-year stint. It's been about 10, 12 years. And, you know, he alienated the kids. So I would go literally 2, 3 years without getting to see them, you know, not much video chats. And to date, I haven't seen them for 2 years. So it was a consequence. And what I will say is, I spent a lot of time mad with him and angry. And while he had done things that were despicable, you know, the real questions were how and why did I get into a relationship with this person and stay in it? You know, those were the real questions that I would unpack with this program, with the help of this program and with fellow travelers. I got into a second marriage. And in about 2016, and again, it was the same thing. I was getting into a relationship because I thought, well, you know, I guess you're okay. Come on down. You know, you seem like it'll work. You know, come on down. Why not? Type of a thing. And, you know, again, my motivation for getting in that relationship was that I was looking for him to fulfill the hole in my spirit. And, you know, there were things I wanted. I was trying to you know, have a family, a healthy and successful family. And, you know, there was a part of me that, you know, saw him and, figured, well, you know, I can clean him up, dust him off, and, you know, we're going to ride off into the sunset and have a wonderful family. And he was a train wreck and he really didn't want to have a relationship. And I forced one on him. And it didn't work out. It was about 7 years of dysfunction. You know, he was not only did he have narcissistic traits, but he was also had a lot of mental health issues, and he would spiral often. And he was also a sex addict. So it was a very challenging situation. And in that relationship, I had two kids with special needs. Both of them have autism and some other diagnoses. And I was basically on my own taking care of these kids and trying to stabilize, you know, the home environment and fix the fires that he was creating that were substantial. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the kids, you know, he couldn't keep a job. The kids were losing health insurance, and it was hell. It was hell. And I ended up coming to ACA about 2 years, I think, before that relationship ended. But by the time I came to ACA, I was on my hands and knees, and I knew that the relationship wasn't work. I still had, you know, basically no relationship with my children, in Colorado. And, I came on my hands and knees. I had no higher power. I did not believe that a higher power loved me. I didn't believe that, I didn't believe that I was loved. I did not feel loved. And it's with that tremendous hole that I came to ACA. My therapist suggested coming, and I came, and I wasn't sure what to think. You know, one of the first meetings I went to was Voices and Across America speaker meeting. And after that first meeting, I kept coming back, because people were talking the stories that I had lived, because for so long I had felt that I was on an island, that nobody had the experiences I had, because most of my life, people, you know, the people in my family of origin acted as if I was the one with the issue. You know, I was the one with the major problem. We're all fine over here. It's you that's the issue. So when I got to ACA, I understood that it's not just me. It was a system that I was raised in, and that the circumstances of my life and the people I chose to marry, and the people I chose to be friends with and people I chose relationships with, that was due to the lack of nurturing and love that I was given as a child. So I got in program. I found a sponsor, and that sponsor was one of the first people. And I want to back up and say that ACA was the first time people have been consistent and showed up for me. Never before in my life. And I was in my late 30s when I got to ACA. Never in my life. You know, I got on a service team. I'm doing some service for a meeting, and I've made some people that they're family, you know, and it was the first time people have ever shown up for me. And that is just such a beautiful thing and such a miracle, one of the miracles of this program. So I found a sponsor and worked the steps with her. And she, you know, when I first started the steps, I thought, well, I'm going to do the steps and then I'm going to be, you know, all is going to be well. I'm going to be cured. You know, my relationship, my marriage is going to miraculously turn into something healthy. And again, I was looking externally when the focus should have been internally. So I thought, oh, you know, when things are good on the outside, that's when I'll be good on the inside. But what I've realized with this program is that it is, you know, my environment externally looked a hairy mess because there was so much inner turmoil inside of me and that I was manifesting and creating that. So I got into step work. And again, yeah, I thought steps going to fix me. Everything's all will be well. And, you know, what I realized, one of the things that I realized, was that I wasn't going to turn out any other way, that my parents had grown up with a lot of, trauma and dysfunction that they hadn't healed. And this was why I was this way, which helped release a lot of the shame. I also realized for me, I will say for me, the steps were the vehicle to getting to my higher power. So the steps were how I found my higher power. And the steps helped me understand that the universe, or gods, I sometimes call them, the universe loves me. There are 6 billion people in this world and I am loved. And I can tell you that. And truly, truly, I believe that. And it's not because things are perfect. You know, in my life, I still have not seen my kids. It's been 3 years. I'm currently navigating a divorce with my second husband. But what I can also tell you is that I have a tremendous amount of peace. And it's not because things in my external environment are a certain way. You know, I used to think that I could control everything externally and that was going to bring me happiness and joy and peace. But it's the other way around for me. I had to get right with my spirit. And because from that is what I was pouring into my external environment. Surrender and acceptance. And I might be jumping around. I apologize. So another thing that came with step work for me was surrender and acceptance. Understanding when I need to accept something and understanding where and how I can make some changes in my life. And typically those changes have come internally. My perceptions on others have changed significantly. You know, when I, about a year ago, I told my mom to kick rocks. I never want to speak to you again, you know, and I, you know, told her exactly what was in my heart at that time. And I meant it. And, you know, after I had that spiritual awakening, you know, I realized, I removed the fact that she was my mother and looked at her just as a woman. And, I looked at her just as a woman and understood so well, because it's the same for me. Here I am just doing the best that I can, you know, to spend time with my older kids and to be a, you know, now single mom. And so in that way, I was able to find a lot of compassion for her, as a woman, and really just lay down a lot of the finger pointing that I was doing, because that's very judgmental. You know, whenever I get into this place of you should have done this and you should have done that, you know, it's very judgmental. And, you know, what I also realized in this program is when, you know, anytime that I am identifying something in someone else, I immediately then ask myself, where does it show up for me? You know, and where and how does it show up for me? And from there I go, okay, well, why does that show up? And that helps me get to the root of things, really. So I say that to say that I don't really spend so much time looking externally at other people as much as I do turning it back on myself and asking myself some questions, which has really helped my relationships in a lot of ways. You know, my relationships are better with my parents even. I talk with them regularly. I mean, have they changed? No. They are still, you know, who they are. And that's okay. I accept them for who they are, and I still love them for who they are. The things that happened in my childhood, you know, the fact that I grew up in a fearful home, all that stuff happened, but I can still extend understanding and compassion and love to them, you know, and be grateful to them that I have life, because I am grateful for my life. I am grateful for my life. I can tell you that in all honesty today. So I know I'm jumping around. I apologize. So yes, second marriage. So let's get to, what exactly has changed for me. So like I said, the steps were a guide, to get to, my higher power. Prayer for me is how I, navigate the challenges. And listen, you know, right now I'm in two situations. I'm dealing with a custody situation, just trying to visit with my kids, just trying to see them on video chat and visit with them in California. And, I don't have an attorney. He does. And, I'm doing my best. I'm showing up and I am making changes where I can. You know, I have found the courage to change the things that I can, which is filing paperwork and standing in my truth. And I'm still, and I have a situation with husband too. We're divorcing, you know, and, I don't have an attorney with him. He doesn't either. I'm showing up and doing my best there. Neither of those experiences feel good. I miss my kids, and the 10, 12 years I've lost with them cannot be replaced. And so there is a lot of healing that I do daily with that. And my children, as much as I miss them, they are a reminder why I continue to do the work and continue to show up. It is for myself, but it is also for others. You know, one of the, amends I did was to myself, and it was that I was going to keep myself in program. Because someday if my kids have some questions for me, which I'm sure they will, I want to be a whole, and I want to be a whole and at peace with my, within myself to be able to hold space for them, in the healthiest way that I possibly can. You know, and these days, you know, life looks so much different. And again, I have a lot of hairy stuff coming on, but I have peace today. I am at peace with myself. I don't carry shame anymore about the things that have happened. And listen, you know, husband number one, he is still saying the same, you know, that she is a mess and all these things. And it's like, no. So I am facing the biggest fear of my life in a court of law, saying, you know what, that was the person I was. That's not who I am now. And that's not who I've been for 10 years. And there's beauty in that. My knees are knocking and I'm terrified about that. But I am so at peace with my who I am and my ability to parent and my ability to navigate challenging situations. And I'm confident within myself enough to do this without an attorney, just terrified. And it's the same attorney that trampled me 10 years ago. But I'll tell you that I show up with courage, and it's not my will that allows me to do that. Thank you. Oh, that's 15. So yes, it's not my will that does that. And that's another thing that I've realized that I need to get right with is my will, because my will had me getting into relationships, trying to fill a hole that I should have been working on myself. You know, my will had me, you know, self-medicating. My will kept me in the problem. My will had me isolating. But my will also helped me survive a really, really, really crappy home environment. But now at this point in my recovery, I've learned how to set my will aside and let higher power do what higher power does. You know, I've stayed single. I've been separated from my husband 2 years now, and I haven't dated. And in that time, it's been tough. I've had moments of loneliness, but really, I've used that time to get to know myself, exactly what I need, why I think the way I think, why I behaved the way I behaved. It's allowed me to get closer to higher power, you know. And listen, I'm raising these two kids. I have them with me most of the time. I have no family to help. It's me. They're with me 98% of the time. So for me, there is no other way but relying on higher power to get through days. And sometimes it's moment by moment. So another thing that has helped, is changing my nature. So like I said, you know, my self-will was, you know, filling this void externally. And that was in my nature. And one of the things that I've learned to do with the program is to replace my thoughts, behaviors, and actions, with different thoughts and actions. You know, I used to, you know, believe that I was such, I used to tell myself, oh, you're such a wreck. You've done this, you've done that. And that's why your life is a mess. And it's like, well, listen, Crystal, if you believe that your actions caused bad outcomes, certainly then it's an alignment to believe that if you change your thoughts and actions to more positive ones, that that will also reap benefits. And I believe that, you know, one reaps what they sow. And I believe that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So I understand my ability to manifest and create. And I am seeing changes in my environment. You know, my husband and my second husband and I co-parent really well, considering, you know, we don't agree in court, really. And that's a miracle. You know, we can, go to first day at school and take a picture with, you know, me and the kids, and, you know, we go about our separate ways. You know, another thing I have found is self-love. That's a big one. Self-love and giving to myself and just being gentle with myself and, all of the things that I used to be so judgmental about with myself, I, have gotten at peace with it. And it's not perfect. You know, it still looks hairy, you know, it's still daily taking an inventory and, you know, weekly going to therapy and things like that. Like I said, I have peace in my life. I'm no longer looking for other people to fill voids. And I know that higher power loves me and that I am taken care of and that I will be taken care of. And the cornerstone for that is prayer, meditation, which I translate to the meditation portion of quiet thoughts. Sorry. which I attribute to prayer. I do prayer daily. I do it twice a day. So yeah, I think that's about all I've got. I hope I didn't ramble too much, but that's all that I've got. I'm gonna get one of my precious angels a snack.